Hello and welcome everyone to the Entrust Group's January 2026 webinar, 2026 Retirement Plan Limits, Laws, and Tax Prep Strategies. I'm your host, Jacob Marchini, and the presenter for this presentation today. Before we get started, I do just have to give this disclaimer that the Entrust Group does not provide investment advice or endorse any specific products, and all information presented today are for educational purposes only. All parties are encouraged to consult with their attorneys, accountants, and financial advisors before entering into any type of investment. Some things to cover on today's agenda. We'll be reviewing important dates and deadlines for the coming year for your SDIRA or other retirement account type. We'll be analyzing some new limits and laws that will apply to 2026, and we will be going over some tax preparation best practices to keep in mind for the coming season. Some information about me. My name is Jacob. I've been here at the Entrust Group for over 9 years. Matter of fact, next month will be my 10th year anniversary. I do have my CISP certification. That is my Bankers Association of America Certified IRA Services Professional designation. Some information about the Entrust Group. We are self-directed IRA administrators for those of you who might be new and considering opening new accounts. We're very proud of our knowledgeable staff, many of whom have the same designation as I do, and we host monthly educational webinars for the benefit of our clients, like this one, on a variety of topics. Some stats for the Entrust Group. We have over $5 billion of assets under our administration across 24,000 plus active investors. We've been in the game a long time since 1980, so over 40 years, over 45 years at this point of service in the industry. And if you're looking to possibly open a new account today as a result of viewing this presentation, we offer a single point of contact service model for our clients. You'll have somebody who will be your go-to person here at the Entrust Group. We'll start things off today by going over some important dates and deadlines in 2026 for your IRA that you'll want to keep in mind. The first such date is coming up in just a few weeks, February 2nd, which would be January 31st, but since that's Saturday, it moves forward to the next business day. On that date, the Entrust Group will send out its FMV, fair market valuation statement for our accounts, meaning that is the last day that we can backdate our clients' fair market valuation for their assets for the end of the year in 2025. And I'll go over more why that matters and what that means in following slides. That's also the time that we'll be sending out our required minimum distribution statement, meaning we'll be notifying our clients that we'll have to take an RMD in 2026 by that date, and it is the date by which we will send out our clients' Form 1099-Rs for the previous year in 2025. So if you had a transaction on your account with us in the previous year that necessitates a Form 1099-R, you will have that in the mail by February 2nd, and a digital copy will also be available to download from your client portal on that date. Now, the fair market valuation, to give some more color as to why that matters. To give more information as to why that matters for self-directed IRAs. So any IRA custodian, whether they be a self-directed IRA custodian or a brokerage custodian like Schwab or Vanguard, has to report the value of their client's assets as a sort of record-keeping tool. That typically does not matter for most clients as anything more than a record-keeping tool, except for those who are of the age to take required minimum distributions from their IRA, because the year-end value, the 12/31 value of their account assets, is used in the calculation to determine how much you need to take out of your IRA as a distribution in the following year, and thus determines the amount of taxation you have to pay to the IRS for that year for those distributions. So it behooves those of our clients who have assets that are not easily valued, like pieces of real estate or investments in partnerships, private partnerships, LLCs, joint ventures, private equity deals in general, if the value of their asset, if there's been something on the investment side of things that they think justifies a change in valuation of their asset, they have until February 2nd to report that to us so that we can backdate that for 2025 so that they can take an accurate RMD for their account in the following year. Some more information about the required minimum distribution itself. This applies to IRA holders who are 73 years old for a given year. So if you turned 73 last year, you have an RMD for 2026. And if you turn 73 this year in 2026, you have an RMD for this coming year that you will need to take. Failure to take your RMD will incur a 25% penalty on the portion that was not distributed. So for some easy math, if you have a required minimum distribution of $10,000 and you take out only $6,000 as a distribution, then you incur a 25% penalty on that $4,000 that you did not distribute, which is $1,000. So you would owe a $1,000 penalty to the IRS. Your RMD is generally due to be taken out of your account by December 31st of a given year. But if it is the first year that you have your RMD, so if it's the year that you turned 73, you have until April 1st of the following year to take that. So you have a little bit of a grace period for the first time you're taking your RMD. Moving on from there, the next date, March 16th, is the tax deadline for S corporations and partnerships, and it is also the date by which those types of entities can normally establish SEP and individual 401k plans and contribute to them for the previous tax year in 2025, unless they file a tax extension, which will be covered in a later slide. Then again, April 1st, this matters for those of our clients and anybody who turned 73 in 2025 and had their first RMD last year. So if you turned 73 last year in 2025 and you realize that you haven't taken your RMD, then there's no cause for concern quite yet. You have until April 1st of this year to take that RMD. And put that correct so you don't have to pay that 25% distribution, a non-distribution penalty. And here's a date that I hope everyone was already familiar with before this presentation. April 15th is tax day, is the time for individuals to file their tax returns and make contributions to your IRA if you did not file an extension. Is also the date for C corps and sole proprietors to establish and contribute to SEP or individual 401k plans, whereas S corps and partnerships had that earlier date. It is also the date by which you need to recharacterize a, says current, but what it means is previous year, so 2025 contribution to your IRA or issue a corrective distribution. So if you did the math wrong for your contribution and you contributed too much or made a contribution you weren't eligible to make, you can correct that and remove that contribution to your IRA account by means of either a corrective distribution or a recharacterization to an eligible type of account by tax day. April 30th, very simply, is the date by which ESA holders, so education savings accounts holders, will get their IRS Form 5498 ESA. And then June 1st is the date where HSA holders and IRA holders will get their Form 5498 SA for the HSA accounts, the health savings plans accounts, and 5498 forms for IRA holders will be issued on June 1st. And that 5498 covers the contributions, rollovers, Roth conversions, and gives your R and you know gives a calculation for your RMD. So if you reach the middle of the year and you haven't taken your RMD yet and you're not sure how to calculate that, you can just read a calculation of your required minimum distribution for the previous year to be taken this year on your Form 5498. June 1st is the deadline for ESA holders to remove ESA contributions, so those education savings accounts. If you have a special purpose education savings account that you've been contributing to for your child and you make an excess contribution, you have until this date to remove that by means of an excess contribution distribution. And if not corrected, you will continue to incur a 6% annual excise tax on the excess amount for every year it remains in the account. So best to correct that timely. Now moving forward from that previous slide, September 15th is the deadline for S corporations and partnerships that filed a tax return. So if you have an S corporation or tax return or a partnership for which you have a SEP IRA or an individual 401k, this is the date by which you need to make that account and contribute to it for 2025 if you file the tax extension. It's also the deadline for S corporations and partnerships to make simple plan employer contributions. Moving on to October, that is the for October 1st is the deadline for existing businesses to establish a new simple plan, a simple IRA for tax year 2025, and the deadline for C corps and sole proprietors, again, as different from S corps and partnerships, to make simple plan contributions for tax year 2025. Then on the 15th, that is the deadline for C corporations and sole proprietors who file tax extensions to establish and contribute to SEPs, and for taxpayers who filed a tax extension. So if you missed tax day and you filed an extension, you can make your contributions or recharacterize a 2025 contribution by this date. Moving on near the end of the year for November 2nd, 60 days before the following plan year, businesses must provide notices to their employees about the type of contribution they'll be making for tax year 2027, so for employer-sponsored plans, and for simple IRAs. So for simple IRA specifically, this is the date by which those of you who are trustees and have, you know, operate a simple IRA for your business and for your employees of that business must send out the documents required to satisfy the plan requirements. So things like your employees' allocations and elections for participating in the plan must be sent out by this date so they have the end of the year to make those decisions and updates. November 13th is the date at which IRA custodians like the Entrust Group will send out the reminders for our clients to make fair market valuation updates. So not really something that clients need to take action on, but just that is the date on by which we need to notify our clients to make required minimum to make a fair market valuation updates for their accounts for the end of the year, just so you get a notice. Then finally, at the end of the year on December 31st, this is the date by which you have to take your required minimum distribution for 2026, unless you are turning 73 this year, in which case you have until April 1st of the following year. And if you have a loved one who passed away in 2025 and you, for whatever reason, have not established an inherited IRA, if they left you the contents of their IRA and you have not dealt with that during 2026, you will have to do that before December 31st to handle their estate. The consequences of not doing so, you can still handle it at that point, but not handling your deceased loved one's IRA and getting a beneficiary or inherited IRA set up by this date results in you losing the option to stretch distributions over your own life expectancy and forces you to use the oldest beneficiary's life expectancy for the RMDs for your beneficiary account, which just robs you of options and leads to potentially larger, faster taxable withdrawals from that account. All right. And with the conclusion of that calendar portion, we're just going to move on to new laws and limits in 2026. So changes to the contributions and things for your IRAs and other retirement accounts in 2026 as compared to 2025. Before we start talking about the new income, the contribution limits, though, I would just like to discuss the modified adjusted gross income limits for traditional IRAs and also for Roth IRAs on the next slide, because that one is also being updated for 2026 and is relevant for your contributions for how much you can either effectively or at all contribute to either a traditional or a Roth IRA. So if you look here, you'll see ranges of income for people in various situations, for single individuals, married, filing separately, etc. This lower end of the range indicates the level at or below which you get the full benefit of your contribution to a traditional IRA. So if you make equal to or less than this $81,000 mark for 2026, you can write off the full amount of your contribution to your traditional IRA from your taxable income and get the full tax benefits there. As you move upward from 81,000 towards 91,000, though, for a traditional IRA, you can always contribute the maximum amount, but as you move upward through this range, you lose the ability to write off a portion of that contribution from your taxable income, up to the point where if you are a single individual, you make more than $91,000, even though you can contribute a certain amount to your traditional IRA, you don't get to write that off of your taxable income for 2026. And that applies to all of these other ranges for folks in different situations. Right. And then similarly, for the Roth IRA max adjusted gross income limits, for these are also being raised from 2025 going into 2026. But as a reminder, and you instead of the situation with the traditional IRAs where you can still contribute, but you just lose the tax deduction benefits. For a Roth IRA, you lose the ability to contribute at all as you move upward from 153,000 to 168,000 until, when you reach 168,000, you are simply not eligible to put any money from your income into a Roth IRA for 2026. And these are the ranges at which that applies for 2026. Right, and then we'll move through these next slots. These are very easy to reference, but just for your information, there have been contribution increases for both traditional and Roth IRAs. You can contribute, $500 more if you are less than 50 years of age, and the catch-up contributions for those over 50 years of age have also increased a little bit from 1,000 to 1,100. So for the maximum contribution is 8,600 if you are over the age of 50, or $8,000, or 8,600 if you're over the age of 50, or 7,500 if you are less than 50 years of age. Now, for employer-sponsored plan contributions, for simple IRAs, there's also been a small increase. This applies to SEP IRAs as well. Small increase in the amount that you can contribute, as well as to the maximum compensation limits and to the minimum compensation that you can receive while being part of a SEP plan. Individual 401ks also have a small increase in the amount that can be contributed as employer-employee contributions and employee elective deferrals, as well as catch-ups. And then for those holders of health savings accounts, also small contribution increases for single as well as family coverage. No increase for catch-ups, though. And then the education savings accounts have the dubious honor of being the only thing that was not edited or not updated or increased. So that one doesn't change. And there are also some recent laws that will take effect in 2026 that our clients and other people who are new to having self-directed IRAs should be aware of for the year going forward. So we have mandatory Roth catch-ups. So starting January 1st of 2026, for employer-sponsored plans like simple IRAs, SEP IRAs, and individual 401ks, if an employee's prior year wages exceeded $150,000, so for relatively high earners, your catch-up contributions must be made as Roth contributions to those types of accounts. You can no longer do pre-tax catch-up contributions to your employer-sponsored plans. And that does also mean that if you are not in a plan that allows for Roth contributions, you can't make catch-ups unless the plan is amended somehow. So something to keep in mind. Very important follow-up to that is that Secure 2.0 for 2026 now allows employers to make Roth contributions to SEP and simple IRAs. That is a new thing that is now in effect. Previously, SEP and simple IRA contributions could only be made on a pre-tax basis. Now they are allowed to make post-tax Roth contributions. So perhaps keep that in mind going forward. Right. And then finally, there are a few things regarding ESAs. So education savings accounts have expanded qualified expenses. So funds for an ESA can now be legally used and distributed for use for new things without taxation. Funds can now be used for textbooks, tutoring, and dual enrollment fees for high schoolers that are taking college courses. So you can use those ESA funds and access them more easily for more things now. On a related note, there's also been the introduction of a new type of account called a Trump account, which is sort of a mini IRA for kids. For children born between 2025 and 2028, their parents can contribute $1,000 per year to these new Trump accounts for saving. So it's perhaps something to look into. All right, now for the final portion of the presentation, we just want to go over some things to get ahead of 2026 tax season and things to really keep your eyes out for to avoid pitfalls in the coming year. Now, those things to avoid are dealing in prohibited transactions, and the easiest way to do that is to interact with disqualified persons to your IRA, which I will define on the next slide. Also, using tools that can be very helpful, like Roth conversions and rollovers between your IRAs, those can be very useful for moving money around, making new investments, but require tactical consideration before making those types of transactions, and I'll cover that. And also bringing attention to UBIT, which is a sort of esoteric concept that many of our clients find out about the hard way. So we wanted to bring it to your attention today as part of this presentation. Now, we talked about disqualified persons and prohibited transactions on the previous slide. And I'd like to define those persons for you today. So, per Section 4975 of the Internal Revenue Code, a disqualified person to an IRA is the account holder, the spouse of the account holder, the lineal ascendants and descendants of the account holder. So, children, grandchildren, parents, grandparents, however many generations of your family you are lucky to have with you at this time, up or down, in. And spouses of those parties are disqualified parties to your IRA, as well as fiduciaries and plan service providers. So, anybody that you are a fiduciary for or a plan service provider for, or anybody that is a fiduciary or plan service provider to you, is a disqualified party to your IRA, meaning you cannot meaningfully interact with them, cannot buy from them, cannot sell to them, cannot allow them to get any benefit from any material benefit or use from your IRA or the assets in your IRA. This comes up with more regularity than I really wish it did. Even just yesterday, I had a conversation with a potential client And he was one of the lucky ones who I had a wonderful conversation with, who described how he wished to perhaps use IRA money to purchase a property, purchase a rental property, and rent that out. And that is a fantastic sort of investment. Many of our clients do similar things, but about 20 minutes into the conversation, he mentioned that it was his intention to have his son live in the property and rent the property from his IRA. And that immediately is, that's a red flag. You cannot allow a disqualified party like your child to take benefit from your IRA or the investments in it, even if they are paying, and especially if they're paying really. That is a prohibited transaction. And the consequences, the ultimate consequences of a prohibited transaction, if you are discovered to be engaging in prohibited transactions with disqualified parties, can end with the total disqualification and distribution of your IRA if that is discovered and not corrected timely. And even just correcting it without the ultimate penalty is. It can be very costly to correct that, and it disrupts things. So just be aware that no disqualified party is allowed to take benefit from your account or the assets in it. All right, moving on to the next item, some tactical decisions to be made and things to keep in mind regarding Roth conversions and rollovers. Now, a Roth account is a great tool to make for maximizing your return tax-free with your investments. And it can be very, very tempting to want to have a lot of money in your Roth IRA to make an investment, especially if you expect a large return because you get the benefits of a Roth IRA, meaning tax-free income from that investment, tax-free return. However, it's very important that you keep in mind that any money that you convert, that you move from your pre-tax accounts into your Roth account, will be taxable to you in that year. So make sure that that major tax hit is something that you can cover and is something that will be worth it with the returns from your Roth IRA investment. So just make sure that that is a consideration you keep in mind. And something on an administrative side of things, again, something that I deal with many times with my clients that I explain that might benefit those of you here on this webinar, is a difference between rollovers and transfers. And this gets confused by many financial professionals who talk about these things as though they're sort of interchangeable, and they are not. And I'd like to explain the difference to you. Now, when money is moved between IRA accounts from an IRA at company B to an IRA at company A or vice versa, typically how that is handled is as a transfer. And a transfer is a pull transaction. It is initiated typically by speaking with the receiving company and filling out their paperwork. The receiving company sends a request for funds to the sending company, and the sending company, after receiving that request, delivers the requested cash or investments. And this type of transaction, a transfer, is non-taxable, non-reportable. It generates no forms. It's not recorded on any tax forms, and you can do it as many times as you wish. There's no limit on how many times you can do it in a given time period or how many dollars you can transfer per transaction or per time period. So that is the gold standard for how you want to move money between IRA accounts or other types of retirement accounts if you can. A rollover is a different type of transaction. A rollover, to explain the difference, is a push. So you typically initiate a rollover by speaking to the sending party, telling them you want money moved from point A to point B, fill out their paperwork, and they send the money out. And they do that either directly to the receiving IRA, or they will sometimes send it to the client and account holder directly before having them send that on to the receiving IRA account. Now, in the case of a of them sending the money from one IRA to the other IRA directly, that's called a direct rollover. Whereas a distribution from IRA A to client and then on to IRA B is called either an indirect or a 60-day rollover, which is a term that some of you might be familiar with and not have had the appropriate context for. And this is a valid way to move money between IRAs. You can do this, but very importantly, the rollover, either direct or indirect, gets recorded on a Form 1099-R as a taxable distribution by the sending firm and recorded on a Form 5498 by the receiving firm, which basically renders the 1099-R moot. It makes that distribution non-taxable. So it's reportable without being taxable, and you can only do one of these transactions per year. So, and that's per calendar year, per 365 days, not per, it's per 365 days, not per calendar year. So if you do a rollover in December of a given year and then try to do another rollover in January of the following year, you won't be able to do that. You will be ineligible to roll over the money that was distributed from your previous IRA, and you'll be left holding a taxable distribution in your hands without the ability to roll it into another IRA account. So please do keep that sort of thing in mind to avoid issues and troubles in the coming year. All right, and finally, we'd just like to bring to our clients and other guests' attention UBTI, or unrelated business taxable income. And I'd just like to read off of the slide here. Unrelated business taxable income is money earned by a tax-exempt entity like your IRA, not related to its tax-exempt purpose. The IRS defines UBTI as income from a trade or business regularly carried on that is not substantially related to the charitable, educational, or other purpose that is the basis of the organization's exemption. Now, the NTrust Group, again, as we disclaimed earlier in this presentation, does not give tax advice, and it's difficult for us to really define what is when an investment generates unrelated business taxable income. But as a general anecdotal example, this sort of thing can come up in the case of our clients who make frequent real estate purchases. So if you use your IRA to sort of do a fix and flip transaction, so if you use your IRA to buy a property and then improve it and then sell it, just once is generally fine. That is something that you can certainly do and has been done. But if that is done continuously, then that might be something that gets flagged as UBTI, which will trigger you to have to pay UBIT, which is unrelated business income tax. So UBTI is something that you earn that causes you to pay UBIT, which is a way to, unexpectedly get hit with taxes for your IRA investment. So perhaps just in your, for those of you especially who are real estate investors, check in with your financial advisors to be sure about whether the actions that you are taking going forward in a given year might qualify for generating UBTI, which would cause you to pay UBIT for your investment activity. All right, and that is the end of my presentation today. And so we will be moving on to the end here for the wrap up. What's next? At the end of this presentation, we'll be sending you a replay and additional resources. Our follow-up email will include a video replay of the presentation, slides, and more education. And you can also take this time to register for February's webinar, The Hierarchy of Protection: Mastering the Commercial Real Estate Capital Stack. If you want to learn more information about self-directed IRAs, you can visit our website and our learning center. We have many helpful articles there for the benefit of our clients. You can follow us on social media for updates. Right. And now we are going to open things up to our question and answer section, which you can type your questions about this material into chat for the presentation, and I'll do my best to answer all of your questions before I have to leave. Like I have a hard cutoff at 12:30, but for the next 55 minutes, I'll be available to take questions if we have them. And here is my personal information. If you have further questions after the Q&A session, or you'd like to get more information that wasn't covered about self-directed IRAs, please feel free to contact me here at these contact details. All right, and let's see if we have any questions to answer. In chat.
I see six, Jake. Can you see that in your Q&A box within your panel?
I am not seeing. Oh, here we go. Q&A. Gotcha. Thank you, Andrew. Had some
Well,
technical
good.
Difficulties there. Okay, so Reginald Grady Jr. comments, if self-directed IRA is invested in a private company that is not traded, it is impossible to determine present value. And that is correct, Reginald. So I guess the answer to the question that is implicit there is, do I have to, like, how can I value an investment in a private company that's not traded? What could possibly be used as the value? And the answer to that is the price you paid for it. So for private equity investments and LLCs and joint ventures, limited partnerships that are not publicly traded, unless, you know, in the vast majority of cases, what is the current value and what continues to be the current value until either the company goes IPO or there is some other, like an appraisal that is done on the holdings of the project or something extraordinary happens, the value is simply what you paid for it, and that does not change. I'd like to make clear that if if we don't get a fair market valuation update from our clients, then we continue to report the value of their assets as we currently have it. So if you don't submit a fair market valuation update to us, then you won't be penalized by us. We will still make a report, but we will make that report using the last value that we recorded, which, if you possibly can update us as to, you know, some relevant value, either increased or decreased from what we currently have, you should do so, so that the value that we report is accurate. That. Right. And then Reginald Grady also asked, can I hold two different Roth IRAs as I am still working for the federal government and they have a savings plan I am enrolled in? They're offering transfer to Roth IRA. What do I do? So that last part, what do I do or what should I do? I cannot answer that. That is a question for your tax advisor or CPA to discuss with Reginald. However, I can tell you that, yes, you can have two different Roth IRAs. You can have as many Roth IRAs as you want, either with the same company or with different companies. So if you wanted to, you could open two Roth IRAs or five or 20 here at the Entrust Group. Having multiple Roth IRAs doesn't really net you any benefit that I'm aware of. So most people don't. I think the only sort of use case that I'm aware of that I've seen here at the Entrust Group for having multiple different IRAs of the same type is so that you can name a different beneficiary for each of those IRAs. So it's an estate planning tool. But yeah, you can do it. You can definitely have more than one Roth IRA. An attendee asks, can you execute both a rollover and a Roth conversion in a 12-month period? And yes, you absolutely can. A Roth conversion is a different sort of transaction from a rollover. You can make both a rollover from one IRA to another IRA and also a Roth conversion. That is absolutely allowed. And what is the process to convert an existing IRA with Entrust to a Roth IRA? That is an administrative process. It's fairly simple. It involves you, one, if you have a traditional IRA here at the Entrust Group, you have to open a Roth IRA to receive money or investments from your traditional IRA. So you'll establish a new account with a new account number, and then it's simply a matter of filling out a Roth conversion request, which is very simple if you're only converting cash. There's no additional paperwork or documentation required for a Roth conversion of cash. You just fill out the Roth conversion form and tell us how much cash is going from account A to account B. For conversion of investments, so for conversion of equity in LLCs or private ventures, or for conversion of properties, there's additional paperwork involved. You have to provide us with the new updated subscription agreements, promissory notes, deeds, things of that nature to show that now the recorded and official holder, as acknowledged by all parties that are relevant for this new investment, is the Roth IRA with the correct account number rather than the traditional IRA. But at the heart of the matter, it's simply a matter of opening a Roth IRA to receive the investments and submitting the correct paperwork to make that happen. All right. And Maureen Costello asks, can you explain a checkbook LLC and what to watch out for? I can. And that is a very good question, especially in the context of disqualify parties in prohibited transactions. So, a checkbook LLC is a tool that some of our clients use to smooth over some of the administrative burdens of having an investment in an IRA, especially our real estate investors. So, if you don't use an LLC for your purchases in your IRA and you want to make an investment in a piece of real estate, you would fill out the paperwork that is necessary for my coworkers in our real estate department to send cash from your IRA to escrow to purchase a property in the name of your IRA, in the name of the Entrust Group for benefit of John Smith, IRA number 12345, which will be the party that goes on the deed and title and all the relevant documents. Thereafter, the management of that property. Excuse me. The management of that property would be handled through your Entrust Group IRA. So any income from the property or any expenses related to the property from your would have to be paid by the IRA. And doing that, both putting money back into your IRA from the investment and paying expenses involves paperwork. You have to send the bills to us to pay with your IRA money and tell us to send that money out, which takes time. There are transaction fees, things of that nature. And so many, many investors who are invested in real estate assets, real estate investments frequently need quick action. There's not a lot of time. It makes things administratively unfeasible sometimes for our clients to have to wait for that sort of thing to happen, and it can become just inconvenient to pay transaction fees. So, using an LLC by having your IRA become usually the single member of an LLC of which you are the manager allows money to go from your IRA to the bank account of that LLC and allows you to use that LLC as a tool to make and manage investments using money provided by the IRA, which is the member of the LLC. So at the conclusion of that sort of transaction, you have a property that is owned by an LLC, and your IRA is the sole member of that LLC and extends its tax protection over the LLC and everything that it owns and controls. And so that LLC can be used to both collect income into its bank account from the investment, as well as to pay expenses related to that asset with the money it generates, the investment generates. Now, the pitfalls of that is that by having money go from your IRA to the LLC, you are removing that money and the administration of that property from the eyes of the Entrust Group or your custodian, which means it's much easier for you to make transactions. Like if you weren't aware of disqualified parties, if you weren't aware of the fact that your spouse or your child is a disqualified party, and you set up a checkbook LLC and you bought a property and then you had your child living in that property, the Entrust Group would have no way of knowing that. You wouldn't need to report anything to us. You're taking on the responsibility for not doing prohibited transactions yourself by putting money from your IRA into a checkbook LLC. So, you know, you if you're using a checkbook LLC, you really want to be aware of what is allowed and is not allowed, and make sure that you talk any actions over with your CPA or tax advisor before proceeding. Okay, moving on to the next question. Can we roll over a regular IRA into a Roth IRA? Yes, absolutely. By regular, I assume you mean traditional. But yeah, you can convert regular IRAs into Roth IRAs by the methods that I described earlier with that previous question. My employer allows me to roll over 401k after tax 72,000 this year to a Roth IRA. Is this a separate limit from 7,500 Roth IRA limit? It is. It is. So contributions to your IRA are not the same thing as rollovers from other retirement accounts. So you can contribute to your Roth IRA, and then you can roll over however much you want. So you can contribute to your Roth IRA and contribute to your 401k, and then you can roll over as long as your employer allows you to move money out of your 401k, if that plan allows for that. Not every plan does, but you can roll over money from a 401k to an IRA in any quantity at any time. I'd like to just take a moment to tie that back to my earlier cautioning about rollovers, is that that is specifically about rollovers from one IRA to another IRA. Rollovers between 401ks and IRAs, or 403bs, 457s, etc., to IRAs are not limited. They are not subject to that once per year rollover rule that IRA to IRA rollovers are. So yes, you are not limited in how much you can roll over from a 401k to an IRA that is separate from the contribution limits. How easy is it to roll over a TSP to a Roth IRA? That is going to be a question mainly for your Thrift Savings Plan Administrator, Mr. Hunter Hill. So a rollover from a TSP or any type of account to an IRA is administratively the same in all cases from the IRA's point of view. You alert the IRA custodian that you intend to roll over a certain amount of cash from this other plan. And for the Entrust Group, you fill out a very short and easy form called a rollover certification, basically saying that this much money coming from this other account will be sent to the Entrust Group. When you get it, put it into my IRA as a rollover. But for employer-sponsored plans like TSPs, thrift saving plans, 401ks, etc., the act of getting that money out of that account to the IRA is different and depends on the specific plan and who's running it. So that's a question. How easy is it going to be to get money out of your TSP to an IRA is going to be a question that primarily has to be answered by your TSP administrator. All right. Well, here's a question. Can you address how to make a backdoor Roth contribution, especially if you are a high income individual? Now, backdoor Roth contributions refers to the fact that, as was asked earlier, contributions are separate from rollovers and conversions, right? You can both make a conversion or a rollover in the same year as well as making contributions. And you can also always contribute to a traditional IRA, even if you don't, if you're out of that tax range by which you are making, which you are not able to write off your contributions to your traditional IRA. You can still make them, you just don't get to write that amount off of your taxable income for the year. A backdoor Roth contribution is basically for somebody who makes too much money to contribute directly to a Roth IRA. They can just contribute to a traditional IRA and then make a Roth conversion to put that money from their traditional IRA into their Roth IRA, which is a loophole. That currently is still completely legal. And here's a very good administrative question from Mirjana Simunza. That is a conversion from trad IRA to Roth IRA possible to do as a transfer in the same investment company since it will trigger the tax? That was not actually the question that I thought it was after reading the first sentence. But is a conversion from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA possible to do as a transfer in the same investment companies? Okay, I think what this question is asking is it possible to convert an investment rather than converting cash? And yes, that is possible. So if you've already made an investment in a traditional IRA, if you use your traditional IRA to invest in, Investments R Us LLC, to the tune of $50,000, and you want to convert that investment, that value of $50,000 investment to your Roth IRA after the fact, yes, you can convert the investment itself rather than the cash. But that does mean having to update the paperwork, like the subscription agreement or operating agreement, whatever the relevant documents are that should name your traditional IRA as the investor and holder of that investment, need to be updated so that it says your Roth IRA instead, so that there's no confusion as to which account owns these investments, on either the side of the Entrust group or you, the client, or the investment company. Everybody needs to have updated paperwork to show who owns and which account owns that investment. Right, how to calculate the RMD if you have many IRA accounts? Now that's a question with some nuance. Okay, so if you have many different IRAs, each IRA custodian will be able to tell you how much your IRA RMD is for their IRA account. So each IRA custodian should be able to tell you what your RMD is for that IRA. However, this allows me to segue into the fact that the amount of your RMD, if you have more than one IRA, if one, either two or three or five, 10 different traditional IRAs, the amount of your RMD total is an aggregate, and you don't have to take your RMD from an individual account. You just have to make sure that you take out the correct amount from all of your traditional IRAs so that you can be taxed on that amount. So to answer the question directly, if you have more than one IRA, then look at the total value of each IRA as recorded on December 31st of the previous year, and then plug that total value, the sum value of all of your IRAs into a calculator. There are many calculators. If you just Google RMD calculator, You'll be asked to put in, I think the relevant information is your year, total year-end value, your age, your birthday, and then the birth date of your spouse beneficiary, if applicable. And that will give you a number that you have to hit by withdrawing from any of your IRA accounts. So if you have, say, an investment with us here at the Entrust Group in a traditional IRA, and it's illiquid. You don't have any cash to take out of your IRA with us. But say you have another traditional IRA at Vanguard or Fidelity that has a lot of liquidity. You can take the total value of your RMD for both your Entrust and your Fidelity IRA from just the Fidelity IRA that has a lot of liquidity. As long as the total amount that you take out of your pre-tax IRAs is correct, then that is a, that is fine in the eyes of Uncle Sam. As long as you distribute the correct amount and he gets to charge you the correct amount of taxes, which accounts that amount comes out of is irrelevant. Right. Can I make contributions to my Roth IRA if my earnings are all from investment and not employment? Now, my understanding of that, Mr. Jeff Ho, is that you have to have earned income. That is the appropriate term there, for being eligible to contribute to your to a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. You have to have earned income. And I do not know the I cannot quote to you the exact definition of earned income and if that includes investment income. But my feeling based on context and on previous experience is that no, if all of your earnings comes from your investments and you don't, it probably isn't earned income, but perhaps check in with your tax advisor to clarify that definition or send me an email after this presentation is over so that I can clarify that for you after doing some research. I'm 73 years old. So then you do have an RMD. Fantastic. Not really a question though, but you do have an RMD if you are 73 years old this year. Question about transfers. I had a question about transfers. I recently took a loan from my IRA. May I transfer funds from another IRA to pay off a loan taken from the first IRA? Now that is a question that you should take to a tax advisor or CPA because you are not allowed to take a loan from an IRA. I assume you mean a you perhaps you meant you took a loan from a 401k, which is something that you can do, but you cannot loan yourself money from an IRA. That falls under disqualified parties because you are a disqualified party to your IRA. You cannot buy from, sell to, or loan to yourself from your IRA. So that is, so if you took a loan and you structured it as a loan with, your IRA loaning money via promissory note to you, that is not acceptable and you'll want to address that with your tax advisor or CPA. So that's a bit of a moot question there. Do I need to pay an admin fee on my cash position within my self-directed Roth IRA? If you have this self-directed Roth IRA, if you have this self-directed Roth IRA with the Entrust Group, then no. The Entrust Group does not bill our clients based on the cash value in their IRA. We calculate our fees based only on the investment value. So if you bring in $100,000 for an investment, and you only actually invest $95,000, and there's an extra $5,000 sitting in there for payment of fees and other just having liquid cash on hand. We only bill you for that $95,000 of investment. We don't bill you for that additional $5,000, but that's an Entrust Group policy rather than an industry-wide policy for IRAs. If this is not with the Entrust Group, then you'll want to ask the custodian of your IRA. So if I make a 60-day rollover with distributions, say on September 1st, and deposit back into the IRA within 60 days, when does the 365-day rule start? end for another 60-day rollover. So that is the date on which you make the rollover. So the date of the distribution is not really relevant, but the date that you put that money back into your IRA or into another IRA as a rollover is the relevant date. So if you take that distribution, say on September 1st, and then you make a rollover of that money back into your IRA on October 1st. You cannot make any further rollovers until October 1st of the following year. So anonymous attendee asks, so you do not require companies to send an FMV for private equity asset. We do not require that. To address an earlier conversation, we do not, hound our clients' companies or their investments for updates as to our clients' investments. The onus for providing us information about updated values for our clients is entirely on the clients themselves. But again, we do not penalize our clients for failing to provide us with fair market valuations. We simply give the valuation that we have for our clients' assets, and it behooves our client to send us their FMV updates so that the amount that we report is as accurate as possible for tax purposes. Okay, James Poulos Jr. asks, regarding UBIT, what is the purpose of a Roth IRA? If it is to grow and generate tax-free income, why would real estate gains and rental income not be considered related? Okay, so that's more a question of the definition of UBIT, unrelated business income tax, or UBI or UBTI rather, unrelated business taxable income. So the issue is the frequency, James. If I might actually just pull up my notes from my slide here. No, the text of UBIT. Okay, IRS defines UBTI as income from a trade or business regularly carried on. So the issue is the regularity. And again, that's sort of a nebulous term that is it's difficult for the NTrust group to define and until our clients run into it. And that's really a question for your CPA or tax advisor to find out how many transactions in a year, what regularly carried on is. For purposes of UBIT, but one transaction per year, if you buy and then sell a house during using your IRA, that is treated as acceptable investment income. But if you do it too many times, it's considered operating a business within your IRA, and that's where we start running into that regularly carried on type of situation. So I hope that is at least helpful and can guide you in your conversation with your CPA or tax advisor to get more clarity on that. Can the checkbook LLC conduct or trade business, e.g., my law practice is in the LLC, which is held by my IRA? No, absolutely not. So that runs afoul of both, prohibited transactions and disqualified parties. That's allowing you to access your IRA funds to be able to invest in your own business practice. And it also probably runs into UBTI, which is, unrelated business income tax. Your IRA is not intended for you to be able to use tax advantage funds to operate a business. It is to be used for making investments and for, saving money for retirement, not to operate a business. So you cannot use your checkbook LLC, which is part of your IRA, to conduct a business that you are running personally. Can I easily send cash from my NTrust self-directed Roth to my other Roth at Charles Schwab? What is the process? I tried to test it online, couldn't figure it out. Okay, so that goes back to my conversation about rollovers versus transfers. So, a transfer, to recap, is typically initiated by the receiving party. So, you would speak to Schwab, tell them that you have an IRA at the Entrust Group and you want to move money from that IRA to your Schwab IRA, they will give you transfer paperwork that you fill out for them, and then they send us a request for money. So if you're looking on the Entrust Group side of things for moving money between one Roth IRA and another to send money out to Schwab, you're barking up the wrong tree. When you move money between two IRA accounts of the same type, either Roth to Roth or traditional traditional, to do a transfer, you speak with the receiving party and do a pull transaction rather than a push transaction. Maureen Costello asks, can cash in the Entrust account earn interest? My real estate LLC pays quarterly distributions that will accumulate over time. No. So specifically for the Entrust group, any cash that you have in your IRA does not earn interest. As I mentioned before, we do not bill our clients for undirected cash in their account. It does not add to their billable fees, but we also do not have access to the, sort of short-term investments like money markets or CDs or things like that for our clients that a more conventional brokerage type account would. So if you are looking to get interest earned on cash in your account, you're probably going to have to look into either having a an L to you can actually have within your self-directed IRA checkbook LLC, you can open like a sub-account for that LLC at a brokerage firm so that you can keep your cash with us under our custodianship, but have sort of a sub-account for your LLC at a brokerage firm that you can use to put in things that can earn interest because it does. If you just have it in your IRA with us, it is not earning you interest. You do not get paid for having cash in the Entrust Group account. Okay, James Whitby asks, tax ramifications for the move from a traditional to SDIRA. So that actually is something that a conversation that I have with new clients frequently. James Whitby clarifies his question in the next. James Whitby clarifies his question here in the next question where he clarifies a Roth IRA, not an SDIRA. So the tax ramifications to move from a traditional IRA to a Roth is that the amount or the value that gets put from your pre-tax traditional account into a post-tax Roth account is that that amount, whatever it is, becomes taxable to you in the year that the transaction happened. So if you move $100,000 from your traditional IRA to your Roth IRA in 2026, you will have to file your taxes for 2026 as though you earned $100,000 of additional income and deal with whatever tax bracket that puts you in. Now, just another attendee asked, does passive income count towards the maximum adjusted gross income limits, the MAGI? I do not know the answer to that question confidently. Now, as mentioned before, the what counts for being able to contribute to an IRA is earned income. So if you don't have any earned income, then you can't contribute towards an IRA. But I don't know if investment, passive income counts as earned income, but my feeling is not. So by extension, perhaps if that is accurate, then it seems like in passive investment income wouldn't count towards MAGI. But I'm afraid I do not know that. You will want to clarify that with your CPA or tax advisor, or send me this question afterwards so I can do a little bit of research and get back to you. Okay, if using an IRA as a pass-through to a backdoor Roth, does Entrust charge two minimum fees even though one account is only active one day a year? That's a very good administrative question. And the answer will require a little bit of nuance here, but essentially, no. So if you open a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA, and the only purpose of the traditional IRA, and the only purpose of the traditional IRA is to be open to receive money and then immediately send it on to the Roth, we will charge you for opening two accounts. So you'll pay two account establishment fees. But as mentioned previously, we don't bill our clients for cash in their IRA. But we do require that a client keep at least some money in their IRA, usually the minimum amount of cash in an IRA to keep it open and valid with no other investments is $250. So if you are planning to continuously contribute money to a traditional IRA and then pass that on to a Roth IRA, what I would suggest you do is pay the establishment fees for two accounts, traditional and Roth, contribute, as much as you can to the traditional, and then send that amount minus $250 from the traditional to the Roth, so that traditional IRA stays open in perpetuity with a small cash balance of $250 in it. And you will not pay us for having that traditional IRA open with that small cash balance for as long as it just has cash in it. So as long as you don't make any investments with the traditional IRA and you just keep that little bit of cash in it, it will stay open in perpetuity, free of charge, and you can use it as a pass-through just to contribute to and then move on to your Roth account. So is a traditional IRA obligated to do a transfer if requested by another traditional IRA for the same beneficiary? So my immediate gut answer to that question is yes. I have never heard of anybody refusing a transfer as long as the paperwork is in good order. There, it is entirely just anathema to my understanding that, if company A sends a transfer request to company B to move money from company B back to company A, company B can't just say, no, we're going to keep this money here with us under our custodianship and not send it to you. So I don't know the answer to that question. But that has never come up. That is a question that I have that I don't know the answer to because but I don't know the answer to it because it's never been asked before and it's never come up in my experience of 10 years nearly here at the Entrust Group. And I think that if you were to run into that situation where a custodian says we will not make your transfer from your IRA with us to an IRA at somebody else if the paper and they don't have a reason for it, if just if the paperwork's all in good order, then I think that would be probably be grounds for legal action. So very good question. I do not know the answer for sure, but I strongly think that the answer is yes, you are obligated to make the transfer. If the paperwork for requesting the transfer is in good order. But perhaps check in with that with your tax advisor to be sh absolutely sure of that. I will certainly be checking in with my coworkers in the transfers department to see if there is any sort of condition under which, we would refuse to make a transfer as long as the transfer request was in good order. Okay, I am a bit confused about the way to transfer funds to my CS Roth. Can CS send a recurring request, or do they have to do it each quarter as the distributions arrive? Now, for the Entrust Group specifically, I don't know if there's any way of doing this differently at other firms, but I will answer in the context of the Entrust Group. There is no way to make a recurring outgoing movement of funds from one IRA to another IRA. Each movement of funds from IRA A to IRA B as a transfer or as a distribution and rollover has to have its own distinct paperwork. So As far as for the interest group's purposes, we have no way of setting up like a recurring request to pull money from another company. And I have not seen anybody have a recurring request to pull money from the interest group on a regular basis. So I believe the answer to your question is no, they cannot send a recurring request, or they cannot just set that up and let it ride and have a certain amount go from account A to account B at specified times. You have to have paperwork for each individual movement of money from one IRA to another. Okay, James Whitby asks, I do not yet have a Roth IRA, all in traditional IRAs. If I establish a Roth now and move money from my traditional IRAs paying the tax, do I have to wait 5 years before being able to withdraw from the Roth? And the answer to that is yes, James. So to have tax-free withdrawals from from your Roth IRA, you do have to satisfy something called the 5-year rule, which once you've done it for a Roth or IRA anywhere, you've satisfied it for all Roth IRAs that you might have at a certain point. But if you have never had a Roth IRA anywhere, then and you're only establishing your Roth IRA now, you would have to wait 5 years from establishment of your first Roth IRA to be able to withdraw that the income from those investments tax-free. All right, James Poulos asks, my Entrust SD Roth IRA had the same invested assets value for the entire year. Only the uninvested cash value has decreased during the year. If Entrust does not charge admin fees on my uninvested cash, why are my admin fees lower each quarter? I would have to look into your account, Mr. Poulos, and see if see what type of account you have and what fee schedule you're invested under, whether you have an old account that might have one of our old grandfathered fee schedules, or whether you are currently under our new current general fee disclosure. I do not have the information available on this call to look into that question. Please send me an email after this conversation to follow up on that, though, with your name and account number and all that information. I'll look into that for you. All right. And an anonymous attendee asks, would it make more sense to have two self-directed Roths, one only owning the checkbook LLC? If I set up a second self-directed Roth with you, can I transfer all of the assets except the checkbook LLC to the new account? Now, this is difficult for me to answer because that's sort of a value question, and that is determined by your financial strategy. But to address to would it make more sense, or is it better? I can't answer a value question like that. But if I set up a second self-directed Roth with you, can I transfer all of the assets except the checkbook LLC to the new account? Yes, you can do that. You can have two separate accounts, both Roth IRAs, one of which holds a single investment in a checkbook LLC, and the other holds all your other investments. If that is beneficial to you somehow, then you can do that, but I cannot give information about whether that is beneficial to you. That is a question for your CPA or tax advisor. And somebody asked, do you want to talk about how to hold crypto in a Roth? Does it have to be an account in a single member LLC that is owned by the Roth? And yes, I would be happy to talk about using crypto. And yes, you are correct that. So when you say holding crypto, typically that means that you are, buying and selling crypto yourself on some sort of exchange like Coinbase or any of the others that exist. Now, you can do that through your Entrust Group IRA, but it means that you have to establish checkbook control. If you do not have checkbook control of your account, you cannot use your account to directly invest in crypto. And the way that you use a checkbook LLC to do that is you set up the checkbook LLC with your IRA as the member and yourself as the manager, as in any other use of the checkbook LLC, put money from your IRA into the LLC's bank account, and then you establish a sub account in the name of the LLC on Coinbase or your crypto platform of choice. And so you put money from the LLC bank account into the crypto sub account and then buy, sell, and trade crypto as normal. And then the income, if you want to funnel that back to your IRA, comes back from the crypto account to the LLC and then eventually back into the IRA. The only other way of investing in crypto is to do it sort of indirectly. So you can invest in a joint venture or a limited partnership or LLC for the express purpose of investing in crypto. So if somebody is pulling together money for the express purpose of investing in crypto from many different clients or investors, you can participate in that directly through your IRA, which in practical function is basically the same as sending money from your IRA to a checkbook LLC to invest in crypto. It's putting money from your IRA into a private equity structure that is then used to invest in crypto. So that is how one does that. You cannot do it directly with your IRA. You have to put money from your Entrust Group IRA into a private equity structure to then either do it yourself through an LLC or let some other party do it through a third party private equity structure. All right. And I have no more questions here. Doesn't look like there's anything else in the Q&A section. So if anybody has any further questions to send to me about the contents of this webinar, this conversation, please do so. My personal information is up on the screen here. You can send me an email or give me a call if you wish, though mostly email is the way to get a hold of me. I would be happy to hear from any of you if you have further questions, and I hope that you enjoyed the in and will found helpful the information in this conversation. I wish you all a good day.